Charles Woodson, Desmond Howard, Denard Robinson, Timanga Biakabatuka, from Yost to Harbaugh, passed down from generation to generation, Michigan football has stood the test of time. What's that feeling you get when you catch your first glimpse of the big house? When you hear, "And take the field." When you see the team emerge from the tunnel, sprint across the field, and touch that famed M-Go Blue banner. Saturdays in the fall, tailgates with friends and family, favorite players, favorite teams, and unforgettable moments. A lifetime of memories. College football in 2020 may be unique, but it has arrived at the corner of Stadium and Main, which is where you can find Michael Spath and Justin Rowe sharing their analysis, their stories, and their emotions about this year's Wolverine. This is the Stadium and Main podcast, presented by Kapnick Insurance Group, Wolverine State Brewing Company, and Lewis Jewelers.
Welcome to the Stadium and Main podcast. I am Justin Rowe, and I am joined today by my co-host, Michael Spath. Mike, it is November 20th, the Friday before Michigan faces off against Rutgers in a primetime game. Are you looking forward to this this night matchup between two football powerhouses in 2020?
I shouldn't say I'm not looking forward to it. I don't love that it's at night. This is the kind of game that belongs at, you know, this is the kind of game that belongs at 12 o'clock on a Saturday. It probably honestly belongs at like 9 a.m. on a Saturday. But certainly, you know, like every Michigan game, I don't know yet that Michigan's quite playing out the string, as the old cliche would go. Certainly, you know, there's still a lot of questions about this Michigan football team, a lot of questions about this coaching staff. And I think every game reveals a little bit more. I mean, one of the comments, the thoughts is, you know, is this team quitting on Jim Harbaugh? And that's probably one of the worst indicators of whether a head coach, you know, it's a good indicator of whether or not a head coach should come back or not. I mean, if he's lost his team, if you've lost your team 4 weeks in the season or 5 weeks in the season, as this game is, if you've lost your team during a year where you came into the year talking about how it was all about the oneness and the unity and how this was one of your favorite teams that you're ever going to coach. If that's the case, you know, that's a pretty damning, that's pretty damning evidence of where a coach and where a coaching staff is. And to me, you know, I remember it was 2002 and Bobby Williams, former Michigan State coach, after the game was just like, I don't know if these, you know, I don't think these guys are paying attention to me anymore. I don't think these, after Michigan beat them 49-0, I don't think these guys are listening to me anymore. And that was like, hey, administration, fire me. I don't connect with my players anymore. And so, you know, when you look at this game here, I mean, that's what the rest of the season is going to reveal is now all of a sudden, you know, these next two games are very winnable for Michigan. God only knows what happens in 3 weeks with Maryland. They've had to cancel back-to-back games because of COVID outbreaks. But suddenly Michigan could get a little bit of momentum going. And if they don't, Justin, I mean, to me, and I wonder what you think, but like if they go out there and I don't want to say lose, but I guess it's possible if they lose Saturday night at Rutgers. But if they go out there and just are going through the motions, you know, isn't that evidence that this is just not, I mean, isn't this further nails in the coffin for Jim Harbaugh?
Absolutely. I think that and we talked about the importance of this season, even in the position that Michigan is at earlier in the week. And I believe last week as well. But even at 1-3, this game is still important and this season is still important. And thankfully Michigan had a really good recruiting weekend, even after they got smoked last weekend. But I still think that it is important for the 2022 class and the 2023 class and beyond for them to show, even if it's Rutgers, it is on primetime. There's a lot of people watching. And so they need to come out and make a statement and say, hey, we may be, you know, not on Wisconsin and Ohio State and Indiana's level right now, and it's a weird year for 2020. But we haven't dropped to Rutgers level yet. And I hate to say that because I think Rutgers is a better team than they ever have been, really, this year. But they are still Rutgers, and Michigan should not be on the same playing level as them. And so I think that they need to come out and at least show that they still are much more talented than Rutgers. They still are a team. They're following these coaches. I'm looking at the defensive side of the ball because I think that everybody out there knows that Don Brown is on his, you know, his last leg. And so I'm wondering if these guys on the defensive side of the ball are listening to Don Brown anymore, if they're looking at it like, all right, we all think it or know he's gone after the season. I don't really care. Let's do our own thing and look towards the next defensive coordinator or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think, you know, even if they don't think that he's long for the position, and I'm not, honestly, I got asked about this on Tuesday when I was on WTK with Sam and Ira, whether or not I thought that the Jim would move on from Don, because he's seemingly, you know, so tight, you know, so connected at the hip to Don Brown, and the possibility that if Jim Harbaugh comes back in 2021, he comes back with the guys that he wants to come back with. I mean, I guess that comes down to ultimately, you know, whether or not Jim Harbaugh, as we've said repeatedly, has full autonomy and full, you know, call over his team. Because I think if it's Jim Harbaugh's call, and there's no ultimatum from Ward Manuel, like, you need to, you know, get rid of a defensive coordinator, or you need to get rid of your offensive coordinator, I could see Don Brown coming back next year. You know, I really could. So I guess we'll see. But defensively, like, they're in a more in trouble defensively. I mean, the status of Quiddy Pay, I don't know yet if he's going to play. Obviously, Aiden Hutchinson is still out. You know, it's a makeshift defensive line that's not putting pressure on the quarterback, especially without Quiddy Pay. Hopefully he can go. You know, the secondary looked better last week against Wisconsin, but, you know, they didn't throw a whole lot because they're running all over Michigan. So, you know, what is Rutgers' approach in this game? Are they like, okay, we'll just kind of do what Indiana and Michigan State did and throw it up there and hope that we get enough pass interference penalties, holding calls, completions, or do they, you know, they think they have a Wisconsin approach. They're just going to attack Michigan on the edges or even go up the middle and find some success in the running game. And so I think there's a lot of questions about this defense that still remain to be answered here. But Justin, what is interesting to me is I had a couple people respond to me on social media this week and saying, you know, what these four games are for me is for these guys to show progress. You know, I want to see some progress out of these guys. I want to see them be better at the end of the year than they were at the beginning of the year. And a little bit of me is like, well, dude, we're four games in and they've regressed every single game. So I don't know that there's hope for some significant progress. I think there's hope that you can beat two crummy teams on your schedule and a third if you play Maryland, although Maryland isn't that crummy, and you win three games. Like, I think that's the only hope. I don't think you're going to show like this massive step forward as a program in these last couple of games.
Yeah, I agree. I think that what you have to look for with a lot of these young guys on the offensive line and now the defensive line and the defensive secondary, you have to look for individual growth. You're looking for these guys to progress individually on their you know, strength, on their playmaking decisions, on running the schemes, on everything like that, so that they are set up in 2021 to actually be a competitive football team. Because we've talked about it, it's 11 one-on-one matchups every play, right? And so right now, Michigan is losing 8 out of those 11 matchups, it seems like, on just about every play. And so I think you have to look at it from the individual point. And I don't think Michigan should look at that from a coaching and players perspective, because they still have to play as a team. But from us analyzing it and fans looking at it, you may not see the whole thing put together, but you have to look at it where let's see, you know, who's an example. Let's see Zach Charbonnet or Blake Corum actually, you know, read a hole and make a cut. Let's see some of these guys on the offensive line start actually making some blocks and working together and protect the quarterback, whether that's Joe Milton or Cade McNamara. So I think that there is a way to progress for this team, even if they're not, you know, going 6-2 this year, obviously, which is out of reach at this point. So I don't know. Do you see what do you see from this team going forward? Do you think that they can progress even individually, or is it like they struggle so much now that everyone's kind of bringing each other down? Because I've seen that a little bit as well.
Well, so for me, for what the last little bit of the season here, and I guess there's more games left than there are that have been played. There's five games left in theory, including that ninth Big Ten, that extra game against a Big Ten West team in the crossover. But what I'm looking for, similar to you, but to me it's like some of those unknown questions. Like, okay, let's figure out this quarterback situation. You've got five games left. Either give the confidence, give the building blocks, the resources to Joe Milton so that he can really take off and be a established quarterback by that year's end, going into 2021 with a lot of momentum on his side, or figure out that he's not your guy. And, you know, whether Cade McNamara is, or if he's a stopgap measure until JJ McCarthy is ready or Dan Villari is ready. I mean, figure out this quarterback situation. That's my priority number one for these last four or five games. Number two is, like, be done with this stupid running back rotation where Hassan Haskins is getting one carry as arguably your best back.
Yep.
And Zach Charbonnet has got, what, 13 carries in four games? Like, these guys are going to transfer. You're trying to attract Donovan Edwards, you know, the most highly sought-after player in the state of Michigan at a running back. Like, showcase something. Like, go out there and let it be two guys. Like, honestly, if you have two good running backs, that's enough. You don't need to be playing four different guys. And I'm sorry to Chris Evans or Blake Corum or Hassan Haskins or Zach Charbonnet, but this is the big leagues. Yep. And not everybody – it's not Little League football where everybody gets their equal 15 minutes. Like, figure out who your dudes are, as Don Brown likes to say, and go with them. So, like, that's a big thing for me in these last couple of games. The development of the offensive line, I mean, Jalen Mayfield's not coming back. Ryan Hayes is coming back. You know, hopefully – maybe we see Jalen Mayfield at the end of the year against Ohio State, but, like, hopefully Ryan Hayes is back pretty soon. Like, start figuring out, like, who are the five guys that you're gonna try to win with in the offensive line next year. And to that end, I mean, I hate to say it, but, like, some like Andrew Vistardis, who is your center, should be ceding some opportunities to Zach Carpenter if he's the future at that position. You know, similarly, wide receiver, I think wide receivers is the one group, and we'll get into our position grades here in just a few minutes at the halfway point. I think wide receiver is the one spot where they're trending in the right direction. You know, tight end, like, get Eric Gall going. Like, I mean, if these are your guys of the future, then get them going now. Those are the big questions for me. And defensively, I mean, you know, that secondary is going to get a lot more work. Linebackers, I mean, I don't know. We all kind of thought Cam McGrone was going to be gone after this year to head off to the NFL, but I highly doubt that at this point. I mean, if he does, he does because he just wants to leave the program, Justin, not because he's ready. He hasn't shown anything close to being at a not even a Devin Bush level. Like, this is – he's gone from someone who I thought was a potential second-round pick to someone who I think would be going in, like, the fifth or sixth round. Like, he has been one of the more disappointing players on this Michigan team this year.
Yeah, I think both linebackers have, honestly. So I think we can get into that more when we do get into the grades that we're giving.
Let's take a little break here, and then we'll come back with our position grades at the halfway point of this Michigan football season. You know, owning a business is a labor of love, that's for sure. But frankly, your insurance shouldn't make more work for you. As a business owner, you rely on relationships. Kapnick Insurance Group believes the best relationships are honest, upfront, and fair. You can depend on Kapnick Insurance Group and Michigan-based Frankenmuth Insurance to personally work with you on your insurance needs. So if you're looking for a proactive partner and not a part-time assistance, let's have a frank conversation about your business. Visit us at kapnick.com or reach out to me, Michael Spath, at mspath@kapnick.com. So Justin, halfway point in the season, you know, quasi, right, again with that fifth game. But let's do, I've always been a big fan of this. I'm, you know, maybe it's because I'm a teacher, and I'm grading my students. I'm doing a midterm with them right now. I've got about 28 of my 42 students graded. I got to finish this up today and this weekend, but let's look at the grades for this Michigan offense. We'll get to the Michigan defense in just a few minutes, and we'll start with the most important position on the field, quarterback. Really good start for Joe Milton in week one. you know, a couple of decent moments. We kind of said that he was being handcuffed a little bit in weeks two and weeks three. Had the deep ball, the good looking deep ball, but haven't seen enough of that this year. And then the disaster of a game against Wisconsin. And so, again, and throw Cade McNamara into this mix a little bit. He did go out there and play a little bit against Wisconsin. But what grade would you give the quarterbacks at the halfway point?
So when you're grading your midterms, is a C still average? Is that the case? I haven't been in school for a little bit here.
I would say a C is average, a D is below average, and an F is failing.
All right. So I'm going to say the quarterback position has been right at the C. I think it did drop off maybe to a C- in the game against Wisconsin just because Milton did have that poor game. But we talked about it for the first three games. It was nothing great. It was nothing terrible for Joe Milton in games one through three. And so I'm going to give the quarterback position a C. It remains to be seen, though. It is really – like you said earlier this week, I can't believe that there's a question mark at the quarterback position halfway mm-hmm. through this season for Michigan. But I'm going to give them a C. Are you thinking the same, better, worse?
No, I mean, I think that's probably pretty fair, average. And the way that I qualify this is, you know, we said coming into the year that at some point, you know, pretty early on, Joe Milton would have to be a star for Michigan and put the team on his shoulders. He's been unable to do that. We said that he had to be one of the best quarterbacks in the Big Ten. How was I going to measure success this year for Michigan? Was if he can go toe-to-toe with Justin Fields at the end of the year. Maybe Michigan doesn't win the game, but he showcases that he's ready to take the mantle from Justin Fields as the best quarterback in the Big Ten going into 2021. If we're being honest, where would you rank him among the quarterbacks in the Big Ten right now? I think at best, he's probably eighth or ninth. And maybe lower than that. And to me, like, that is a complete and utter failure of the coaches to develop and have this kid at where he needs to be 5 weeks in the season. So I think they're a solid C. They're average. They're not above average. They've got the potential so that they're not below average. But, yeah, I mean, the rest of the season, they've got to step up and be far better than they have been for them to get up in that B range. Running backs, Justin, I mean, honestly, you know, the first week of the year, Hassan Haskins and Zach Charbonnet were explosive. We've seen some good things consistently out of Blake Corum. But honestly, other than Blake Corum and a little bit of Hassan Haskins, this has not been a good running back room. And it's not been a good running back room because of the things we talked about earlier with the crazy rotation where everybody's getting, what, 3-4 carries, 4 touches in a game, which is just maddening. The lack of success in the running game with poor offensive line play. And so, you know, Michigan's not even getting a lot of opportunities for the running backs. I mean, my God, has anybody – I don't think anybody's had 10 carries in a game this year. No. And I don't think they've had 40 carries in a game this year. So, you know, they're just not getting the opportunity. But I give them, honestly, for what my expectations were of the running back – and, again, this is more a little bit of the running game – I give it a C-minus, maybe even a D-plus. I mean, this is well, well below our expectations.
Yeah, I was going to go D range for the running backs, and it's unfortunate. I'm going to keep going back to the education part for analogies here, but it's like it's a group project that you have four really, really smart kids in that group, but they can't work together, and they're not getting help from their teacher, not getting any direction from their teacher to help them succeed on that group project and get an A. Because I think when you look at that group, they have A potential, don't they? And so does the quarterback position as well. That's what's so frustrating for Michigan fans out there. This running back room, we thought going into the season, was going to be 100% their deepest and best position group here. And so for us to grade them four games in as a D is a major, major disappointment. But the talent level is so abundant in that position room. That's where I think it's super frustrating. And they could be a B or an A if they just went with one or two guys, I believe. Or also, obviously, if the offensive line played better as well. So let's go straight into the offensive line as well. Where do you rank them, even though, you know, there's injuries and young guys and everything like that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the injuries to Jalen Mayfield and Ryan Hayes. You know, two games in the year, you lose Ryan Mayfield and you lose Hayes, or Jalen Mayfield. I think it's Ryan Mayfield. Jalen Mayfield. I mean, that's hard. So now you've got five guys starting that were not starters last year. And I get that. And I understand that that's a huge challenge. But, I mean, look, I always go back to this. Michigan uses this phrase that is corny and overplayed, but they always say the expectation is for the position. If the expectation is for the position, if what their standard is that you need to compete at this level and perform and be efficient at this level, then it's another D because, I mean, they're getting blown off the ball. They're not creating running room. They're when they're pulling, they're not getting around. They're whiffing on linebackers. They're not getting up to the second level on their combo blocks to create the holes for the running back. You know, they're allowing pressure, significant pressure on Joe Milton. I mean, tell me one thing this offensive line is doing well. Nothing. They're doing nothing well right now. And again, they are young, but you know, unfortunately, this is another group that's getting a failing grade.
Yeah, I would even go on the D minus maybe for the offensive line. And it's unfortunate because, yes, you said they're young, which they get a pass maybe for the first game or two. And I know they didn't get the three MAC schools to play this year before they went into the Big Ten schedule. So they were thrown right into it. But I would give a pass for being maybe not physically ready for a game for the Big Ten if you're young, but Ed Warner's got to have them ready scheme-wise, and they've got to know their assignments. And so when they're doing none of that right, I believe that it is a low D grade for them. So that's where I think it's been frustrating for me to watch this offensive line is, like you said, it's not just them being overpowered because they're young and haven't put on a ton of weight or something like that. It's them not being able to know their assignments and just completely whiffing and missing on guys that are getting to Joe Milton or blowing up the hole that one of those running backs were going to go through. So let's stick with the offensive side of the ball, the last position group here, the wide receivers. So, you know, another young group, obviously Ronnie Bell is back. They're missing Nico Collins. Where do you have the wide receiver group as far as a grade?
Well, I've got the receivers. I would probably say a B. I think a B is probably pretty good. They've shown a lot of potential when they've had opportunities. They've got a few too many drops. You know, Ronnie Bell has a drop. Mike Stainer still has a drop. I believe Roman Wilson has a drop. And so they've had too many drops. But and people talk about the separation. It's hard to get a feel for the separation when you're watching it, on TV versus being at being field level up in the press box or being at the game. And so I can't really speak too much about the separation. But I do think that they've had opportunities and they've probably made the most of those opportunities. Cornelius Johnson had the big catch down the field. We've seen, Roman Wilson and A.J. Henning both look good as young guys. Giles Jackson has been probably one of the bigger disappointments. And again, is that because of him? Is that because of the way that the coaches have failed to utilize him? I mean, we'll get to coaching, and I think we know a grade we're going to give them. But you have this pretty talented wide receiver core that's not like the tight end position, which we'll get to in a minute, that for the most part is making them – is cashing in on their opportunities, and yet they're just not getting the ball in good spaces, in good places consistently enough. So I give them a B. Justin, I think that's probably pretty fair. They don't deserve an A, and they're certainly above average when it comes to when they get their chances.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at it from the perspective of what could have been, they're running some pretty good routes. And we've actually seen this with Donovan Peoples-Jones and Nico Collins before when Shea Patterson would miss them or would not see them down the field. But, Joe Milton, this wide receiver crew could have, what, three, four more touchdowns if Joe Milton can throw a deep ball. So I think that a B is very fair for them. And so I think the potential of this wide receiver room is probably one of the best on this team as a whole. I think when you look at 2021 and beyond, These guys are mostly very young. Even Ronnie Bell is young, honestly. So I think that when you look at it from that perspective, they really are going to be a solid group for the next few years here. But I mean, like you said, when you look at Giles Jackson, he has 11 catches for 117 yards on the year. I mean,
terrible.
We have seen how many guys get that in one game. Honestly, most number one receivers out there get close to that in a single game. And so, Ronnie.
Well, not only that.
Go ahead.
Yeah, not only that, Justin, but I mean, the yards per catch is a bad number. I mean, we're talking. You're looking at 10 yards per catch for a kid as talented as Giles Jackson that has the elusiveness, that has the speed of Giles Jackson, and he's averaging 10 yards per catch. I mean, go back and look at the guys, or just look at national college football right now. Look at the top wide receivers out there. They're averaging, you know, 17, 18 yards per catch. They're a deep threat. They're a, you know, speed and space, which is just the biggest bunch of bullshit that we've ever been sold in our lives. This speed and space crap. Josh Gattis, I don't know that, you know, this is exactly what he was planning 2 years into his coordinatorship, but I mean, that was a crock, man. But I mean, yeah, how do you not find a way to get these guys the ball in space? How do you not get them the ball in crossing routes? How do you not get them the ball on wheel routes? How do you not get them the ball on screens and downfield? I mean, it's just so, you know, the plays that they get them on are plays where there's three defenders in the area. To me, that's just, it's just a failure of the coaching staff. So, no, you're right. I mean, it's a group that's not getting anywhere close to realizing their potential. And I think that's on the coaching staff. The flip side, I think the tight end position is on the tight ends. Mm-hmm. Because what I believe Eric Gall in the first four games has had four drops. Nick Eubanks has had three drops. These are the only two guys at the tight end spot that have gotten the ball thrown to them. I mean, that's seven drops from the tight ends in four games. I mean, that's terrible. And they've been big drops, too. So, you know, I look at this tight end position, and again, it's another group that's getting a D, because I'm sorry, for as much immense talent as you have, to have seven drops in four games. I mean, you shouldn't have seven drops in a season, and in four games, it's just a group that's underperforming, and it's on them. It's not on the coaches.
And I'm looking, they have 11 catches between the two of them. So 11 catches, seven drops. That is not a good ratio, Mike. So when you're looking at speed and space, and we were looking at that group, Eubanks, and we're, you know, told that Eric Gall is maybe the best tight end possibility, you know, in the future, of all time at Michigan. We're looking, when you say those things, then we're expecting those things. So when Jim Harbaugh says it in a press conference, we've got to see it on the field. But honestly, Mike, I'm giving them an F, because I've also a big part of a tight end's job is blocking. And I have not seen either of them block well this year at all, Eubanks or Eric Gall. And so that's where I'm frustrated, because I think that I thought that they could help the run game this year with using them to block. Eric Hall's a big dude. Nick Eubanks is a big dude. Even if you want to throw Ben Mason in there too, he's a big dude. And in week one, he was blocking really well. And he even caught that touchdown pass. Well, we haven't seen that at all from any of those three in there as far as blocking. And so when you are dropping balls and then you can't be a run blocker for this offense as well, I'm sorry, you aren't doing anything that you're asked of. And so that's why I'm going to give them an F.
Okay. Well, those are not good grades for the offense, certainly. One position group, the wide receivers, above average, quarterbacks average, everybody else getting a D or worse. And that is a failure on this coaching staff, because there's far too much talent. Even along this offensive line, there's far too much talent. And I said this, and because people said, like, well, you know, you've got the injuries of the offensive line. But look, if you're in year six of Harbaugh and you've got two true freshmen and starting sometimes, or sometimes it's a true freshman or redshirt freshman and a walk-on, all starting among your starting five, you know, that's recruiting, that's development. I mean, you should never be stuck in that type of position. To have the makeup of the offensive line look like it does for Michigan right now, where you have, no returning starters from last year in there at all. I mean, that's just, it's not, that again, that's on the coaches, and we'll get to them in a second. But let's take a break. So Justin, you know, a company in an organization that I think if we're giving the position grades, grades out as an A, is Lewis Jewelers, our friends in Ann Arbor, where Ann Arbor gets engaged. I mean, whenever you go in there, the moment you walk in there, you know, there's going to be someone, an expert who is helping you to come up with the right gifts, come up with the right presents, come up with whatever you're looking for. And there's no failure to develop there. Like they're going to help you figure out like what is the, what's within your budget, what makes the most sense, what's going to wow the person who you are, who you're buying for, watches, rings, necklaces, earrings, whatever you're looking for. Our friends at Lewis Jewelers have top of the line quality and top of the line customer service. And one of the things I love about them is they don't get paid off of commission. And so they're not up there. They're not in there trying to upcharge you, trying to get you to buy a ring or trying to get you to buy a watch that is outside of your price range. You know, they're going to be looking out for your best interests all the time. And so, yeah, give them a solid A plus. When you talk about Lewis Jewelers, you can find them on Stadium Boulevard right here in Ann Arbor, and go to lewisjewelers.com. All right, Justin. So, boy, offense not pretty when we talk about midseason position grades. Defense, ooh, boy, I don't think it's going to be any better. Defensive line, again, you take Quiddy Pay and Aiden Hutchinson off the field, and that hurts a lot, right? But, you know, Julius Welshoff, Taylor Upshaw getting their chance. Luigi Villain is a fourth-year player that they had a lot of high expectations for. To me, the problem with the defensive line, I think when Quiddy Pay is in there, it's a group that probably gets like a C. Without Quiddy Pay in there, there's just no threat at all to get to the quarterback. And I think probably the biggest disappointment, and no shock here, has been the interior of the defensive line. Donovan Jeter, Carlo Kemp have been out-muscled, out-sized, have just not been physical. Someone like Chris Hinton, who former five-star, has the most potential inside. I mean, he plays too high. So he's been getting out-muscled. Mazi Smith, we just started seeing a little bit against Wisconsin. He didn't play well. I mean, the defensive tackle position has, again, been a tremendous weakness for Michigan. And then without Quiddy Pay and Aiden Hutchinson, the defensive ends are a group that doesn't threaten anybody with the pass rush. And so this is a bad position group for Michigan that has traditionally been one of their greatest strengths defensively.
Yeah, and unlike we talked about for the – wide receiver group where, or even the running back group, a lot of the offensive side has potential, right? And we think that they could be solid after another year of growth and development in 2021 and beyond. I don't see this group on the defensive line really taking another step forward in 2021 either, unfortunately. So you lose Carlo Kemp after this year. I just think, you know, with Chris Hinton and Mazi Smith, those are guys that we really needed to step up here and make a huge jump in 2020, and they just haven't. And so I it's tough for me. I know they're young still. I understand that. But it's tough for me to see a ton of potential in them to really develop and get better for the next few years. And then even looking at Louis Villain here as well, he had a rough couple games, and I know he's inexperienced because of injuries and everything else. Coming in for Quiddy Pay and Aiden Hutchinson, he hasn't played super well. And then also, you know, Taylor Upshaw, he's shown a little bit, yeah, but not so great. So these young guys that have come in, yes, I'm sure they'll develop over the next couple of years, but they haven't shown a ton of promise like I have seen in the wide receiver group and running back group.
Go ahead. You're going to give a D?
Yeah, I'm going to give a D as well, maybe even D minus, because okay. you when you give up 350 yards rushing to one team, I know it's Wisconsin, but oh my gosh, you can't give them a pretty anything above that, can you?
Well, no. I mean, they gave up a lot of yards to Wisconsin. They gave up a lot of yards to Minnesota in the ground game. They couldn't put any pressure on Michael Penix Jr. from Indiana or Rocky Lombardi from Michigan State, who finally, as we saw in week 4, Rocky Lombardi got benched. He has essentially been one of the worst quarterbacks in college football this year, save the Michigan game where he was an all-star. And that's on both the secondary and the defensive line for failing to put any pressure on him. And, you know, when we talk about the defensive line, you're talking about the hope for 2021 and looking at what Jim Harbaugh has to do. I think he's got to start with replacing Sean Nua. You know, 2 years into his tenure here as the defensive line coach, they haven't got, I mean, Aiden Hutchinson and Quiddy Pay have gotten better and good players, but everybody else has been a disappointment. And Sean Nua's got to go because he's just not getting the most out of these guys. At the linebacker spot, you mentioned earlier in the podcast, I mean, Cam McGrone, Josh Ross, Mike Barrett. You give me those three guys, you give me the experience of Josh Ross, you give me the physical freak potential of Michael Barrett, and you give me what we saw of Cam McGrone last year. And I'm telling you right now, Penn State, Ohio State, Wisconsin, Michigan's got the best linebacker core in the Big Ten. Instead, they probably got something like the sixth or seventh best linebacker core in the Big Ten. Cam McGrone's just not making plays. You know, worse than that, you know, not being a guy who is creating chaos, but he's so often in the wrong spot at the wrong time. And same with Josh Ross. You know, they're not reading their keys really well. They're ending up on the wrong side of the wash for the offensive line coming through, where they can't get to the running back because they've taken themselves into a position where now there's an offensive lineman or two offensive linemen blocking their way. They're not getting in the offensive backfield. Michael Barrett looks like, I want to say a flash in the pan, but he was great in week one, and we haven't heard from him since. And so, you know, teams have kind of figured them out a little bit. At the same time, this linebacker core is just they're flailing all about. They're just not playing good football. And so another position grade that is, you know, well below average.
Yeah, these guys, honestly, I don't want to be super harsh, but oh my gosh, they look lost on the field. And like you said, for guys that this is probably one of the most experienced position groups on the Michigan's team this year. And so for them to look so lost is really frustrating. So I've put out some videos on Twitter and everything, and they have really, really struggled with finding football and filling those gaps. And so this is a D minus for me. I think the one bright spot for this position group is, and it's not a bright spot for these guys individually, but for Michigan fans out there, you're probably going to have all three back next year because I don't see, like you said, any of them going to the NFL at this point. So where you would have had to fill those spots with some freshmen in Nikai Hill Green and Kalel Mullings, you probably won't have to fill those spots anymore because I would imagine all these guys are going to be back.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I can think of is Cam McGrone saying, hey, I'll get drafted on potential. I'll go out there and have a great combine. But I doubt that, you know, I doubt that he's thinking that way right now. I mean, you look, he's only a redshirt sophomore. So
right.
He comes back, and I mean, he still has 2 years after this. And really, he has three because everybody gets this extra year of eligibility, which I think is going to end up not being the case for most of these teams. I don't think they're going to really honor that. I know that Michigan does not intend to honor that in the Olympic sports. They're not going to give anybody an extra year of eligibility, with the exception of some of the, you know, the spring sports from last year. But no one else is getting that extra year of eligibility, according to a couple of athletes that that have shared that that could be fifth-year seniors down the road here. But so I don't think that's going to be a big thing. But I do think that they'll be back in the secondary. You know, this is the secondary, the biggest question mark after this year. First of all, you're going to lose Brad Hawkins, which, you know, I think everybody would say, like, no big deal. I mean, he's been really poor this year as someone who I had high expectations for coming to the season. Dax Hill, would Dax Hill look and go, I'm out of here. I'm going to go transfer somewhere else, especially when this rule goes into effect in January, very likely that you can transfer without having to sit out a year. If I was Dax Hill, I'd be weighing that big time. Alabama, Oklahoma, one of these schools that I considered before Michigan, you know, they could use a high flight safety right away. So that might be something that we have to talk about and look at going forward here. But Justin, secondary, you know, one good game against Wisconsin, three awful games. I mean, you do the math. You put it together. Way too many penalties still. An inability to cover guys, not looking for the ball, not making plays in the ball. You know, very few turnovers. This is until the Wisconsin game, this was the worst position on Michigan's team, and nobody would argue that. And now, I don't know. I mean, maybe they get a slight uptick to like a D from an F, but it's a group that has a lot to prove still.
Yeah, and honestly, Mike, I don't even know if I can really truly give them an uptick from an F to a D, because I believe that, yes, they had a decent first half against Wisconsin, but if Wisconsin needed to throw the ball, I imagine that they probably would have figured it out against this secondary. So when you rush for 350 yards, you don't have to throw the ball at all. So they just didn't. But I unfortunately, yeah, this is an F for me as well. I think that, you know, even when these guys have been in position, they don't know how to play the ball. They're grabbing, they're doing it all. We've talked about this. We sound like a broken record, I'm sure. But it's very frustrating. Like you said, Dax Hill, gosh, that is going to be a real, real tough thing for Michigan fans to swallow if he does look to transfer, because he is the only bright spot in this defensive secondary. And so, yes, they are young. Vincent Gray is still a redshirt sophomore. Andre Seldon is a freshman who I believe has a ton of potential. We'll lose Brad Hawkins this year, unless he chooses to come back, you know, because of the eligibility thing. Who knows what happens with that? But yeah, I just think that this is another position group that I don't know if I see a ton of potential. These guys on the corners are three-star guys, and so unless Andre Seldon comes in and turns into a stud and they can develop these guys, it's an F right now. And I'm not going to say that they're going to not get up to a decent grade, but I think that C is the ceiling for this position group moving forward.
Yeah, I think that's probably pretty fair. You know, Jamon Green and Vincent Gray, they would have to take an exponential jump for this group to improve. And Brad Hawkins, we don't really need to go down that path and single these guys out, but it's been poor. I mean, I don't think he's made a play. I don't think he's done anything. Like he's not in the right position. He doesn't make a good tackle. He's not making any plays back there. That's been really, really unfortunate for Michigan to have a senior leader like that in a group where they really needed leadership and performance. And he's just done next to nothing. So special teams, you know, they've had some good returns from Giles Jackson. You know, Quinn Nordine is kind of solidified the kicking position again. You know, after Jake Moody, you know, missed one early on in the year. Punting, Brad Robbins has taken a job away from Will Hart, which, you know, kind of needed to happen after the first game and a half of Will Hart. I think they've been solid. I think they'd probably get a B, just like the wide receivers, but I wouldn't give them anything, you know, more than that. And again, part of it is they just haven't had much opportunity. Quinn Nordine hasn't had a lot of opportunities to kick field goals. Brad Robbins has had a lot of opportunities to punt the ball, and he's been pretty good overall. So they get a solid B. But Justin, let me ask you this question. What grade do you give, and I think I know, to the coaching staff 4 games into the season?
Oh, gosh. I mean, it's when you look at the talent level, we talked about how many 4 and 5 stars are on this team, and it's 44 stars and 2 5 stars on this team right now. And that is more than just about everybody in the Big Ten except for Ohio State, I believe. And so maybe Penn State. But when you look at that talent level and what you're able to work with, I mean, if you give that talent level to any other coaching staff in the Big Ten, minus a couple at the bottom, they're going to do really well with it. You know, I think that's the most frustrating thing to most fans out there. So this has got to be a D minus for me. Or I mean, and I'm being nice there, I think. This coaching staff has failed this team. They failed the fans. They have really, really struggled to develop these guys in the off season, to prepare for a season where all they did was practice for how many months before the season. They said they never stopped. They said they were going to, you know, back in August, Jim Harbaugh said, yes, we're ready to play if you just tell us when and where. And guess what, Jim? No, you weren't. And so it's just been a failure week in and week out. After week one, it was, you know, which turns out to be not a good win at all because Minnesota is at the bottom of the Big Ten. You have looked unprepared, overpowered in every single game. And not only that, but this coaching staff got outcoached by Mel Tucker's staff, who's only been in East Lansing for, 6 months now? So I think that right there gives them a failing grade.
Yeah, no, it's an F for me big time. I mean, let's face it. We just did the position grades, and we gave a B to special teams and to wide receiver, and everything else got a C or worse. In fact, most position groups got a D. When you look at this defensive side of the ball, they don't cover well. They don't rush the passer. They don't stop the run. They don't create plays in the offensive backfield, tackles for loss. They don't create turnovers. So those are the five things that a defense needs to do. They don't get off the field on third down. They're bad in third and long. They aren't good in short yardage situations. Like, they don't do anything well as a defense. And if you flip sides the ball and you say, well, what does the offense do well? They don't run the football well. They don't throw the ball down the field. They don't create explosive plays. They don't get the balls to their wide receivers and their tight ends in space. They don't protect the passer very well. The quarterback is inconsistent and inaccurate. I mean, so it's an entire side of the ball that doesn't do a single thing well right now. And so to me, what's below an F, a G, an H, a freaking Z? I mean, they're 1-3, and I get that they've played Wisconsin, Indiana, two of the better teams in the Big Ten, but they got boat raced by both of them. They lost to a Michigan State team that has looked like absolute garbage in their other three games. They lost to a first-year head coach. They're not developing their talent. They're not motivating these guys. It's a flat-out F all the way around, man. I mean, this is as poor of a coaching job as I have seen a staff do at Michigan in my lifetime. Like, this is comparable to 2014 Brady Hoke. This is comparable to 2008, Rich Rodriguez. This is as bad as it's been in my lifetime with a team and with a coaching staff. And so, yeah, we're not letting them off the hook at all. Tell me one position coach right now that you're like, okay, he's doing a pretty solid job. There's just nobody. Because even Jay Harbaugh, who handles the special teams, is also handling the running backs, and the running backs are just completely disheveled and or disorganized because of all the things they're trying to do with them. So, no, there's nobody on this coaching staff who gets a passing grade from me at the halfway point here in the season. So, Justin, we're gonna hear from a pretty cool business leader here in the Ann Arbor area. And then we'll come back and we will look at what's at stake for Michigan in this game against Rutgers and our predictions for Saturday night. And that's Saturday night, Big Ten Network. What are they doing putting this game on 7:30 p.m.? My goodness. I'll be curious to see what the ratings are for that one. It's on Big Ten Network. Again, this game should be being played at like 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. Yep. But Justin, we'll come back and get our predictions. Hey, joining us on the Stadium Main podcast today is the executive director at South and West Washtenaw Consortium, and that is Ryan Rowe. Ryan, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, Ryan, explain a little bit to our audience, so a lot of them probably with teenage high school or at least coming close to high school level children, what the South and West Washtenaw Consortium is. And how it really can, especially to those parents out there, how it's going to really fit into a conversation about their children's future.
Yeah, for people our age, if we're in the mid-40s, 50s, vocational education back when we were in high school probably looked different than it is today. Today, the Southwest Washtenaw Consortium serves six districts, Chelsea, Dexter, Lincoln, Manchester, Milan, and Saline schools. So those six districts have combined together in a consortium format to allow juniors and seniors in high school to take advantage of career technical education programming. About 22 different programs, everything from robotics and engineering, computer aided design, health sciences, cosmetology, welding, automotive, and others. And juniors and seniors from those school districts can sign up through their high school to attend CTE programming at no cost to the family or the student to attain academic and technical skills.
Well, and Ryan, I mean, I think what you just said there, A, it's cost effective, as you mentioned, it's through the school. But I wonder if you could get a little more into the idea of why it's a smart move, why it's maybe a practical decision for a junior or senior to look at a program like this and how that could help shape them, both for like their immediate future, graduating from high school and the opportunities it could lead to, but also how it could help them if they went on to a four-year college program.
Yeah, so it's interesting. My doctoral work is actually in career technical education, and I studied specifically what were those influential experiences that a student had through their career technical education program that really affirmed the fact that this was the occupation that they wanted to further study. And so, you know, a lot of juniors in high school or seniors in high school, they would like to they'd like to be a nurse and go on to U of M and study nursing, but really until they go off to college have really no practical experiences aligned with the nursing career. So through career technical education, specifically with nursing in this case, students are able to be certified as a CNA. They're able to get into a medical facility and have practical experiences, work with a nurse throughout their junior or senior year, and then potentially have a co-op and a work experience in a medical setting. They can then affirm the fact that this is really what I want to do before they go off to college, or most importantly, I've had a lot of students figure out that this isn't what they wanted to do, and they can switch gears before they go off to college and start to accumulate student debt. So really one of the biggest benefits is really finding out this is what I want to do, and then specifying even an area, in this case nursing, that they want to do. And at times that can really change the course of where they want to go to school. If they like a specific kind of nursing, for instance, mm-hmm. then they might want to go to U of M or someplace else. So I look at it as a two-year investment in their future to really affirm the fact that this is what they want to study in the future.
Well, and I think, Ryan, what you just said there about kind of even honing their focus on where they want to, you know, go to college afterwards, that's the one thing that I always try to, you know, I'm a University of Michigan grad, so is Justin, look, my school is really good at certain things, really, really good at certain things, but there's some things that it's not good at. If you want to go to, another school in the state of Michigan, if you want to go outside the state of Michigan, most schools, most universities over the course of 100 years or 50 years have honed in at being, you know, outstanding at 2, 3, 4, 5 things. And so, especially if you learn, you know, when you're 17, 18 years old, this is something I really like, you know, maybe you don't go to the University of Michigan. Maybe you don't go to Michigan State University. Maybe you focus in on a fair state that does, you know, packaging really well. Maybe you focus in on a program outside of the state Toledo that has their specialty because that's what you want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, we have students that come to us for engineering and they'll get into our computer-aided design program. They'll get excited about civil engineering. Well, a Ferris State University or a Michigan Tech, they've hit that niche. And then some other one of our program, like a welding program, you know, you can go through our program, attain some certifications, and then go off and work while you're going to school. Or there's a wide variety of welding occupations that you can exit high school right now and make a really good wage with health benefits. One instance is American Soy Products in Saline, been around for 40 years, established company. They're looking for students that have an aptitude for preventative maintenance and maintenance skills. Not necessarily need to come in knowing everything. They'll train you. They'll run you through their training program with lean manufacturing. But students can come out of our automotive program, our welding program, our engineering program, and really show an aptitude for maintenance and then go through a company's training program. And American Soy is just one of those examples where students can exit making a very good income with health benefits and be trained on the job. And at the same time, be going to college. So I just think there's a lot of opportunities for students that want to enter a career right out of high school, want to go off to college after high school, or both. And, you know, COVID's really turned us on our head in education, and specifically career technical education, where you're learning hands-on practical experiences in school. So every day that we're in school right now, we think is a blessing and an opportunity for students to gain further academic technical skills, and just trying to take advantage of every day that we've got before students approach June, and those juniors and seniors are either moving to their senior year or moving off to a post-secondary education.
Well, Ryan, I have to say too, one of the things I, you know, looking at the website here that I really appreciate is how present day you are. You know, when you look at it, I mean, some of the things, cybersecurity, you know, that's a pretty big issue in our country right now, and where we're going to need more and more people, more and more graduates that are capable of doing that. Looking at digital multimedia information resources design, graphics communications. I mean, these are very, very, you know, in the moment, like the future of our country. Like you see, it's clear that you guys, I mean, certainly you have things that, you know, cooking and culinary arts that are always present, but you've adapted to the needs out there in our country right now.
Yeah, they're certainly high wage, you know, high skill and in demand occupations. And going through our programs, you would attend for a full year, attain academic and technical skills. You can attain some credentials as well for college. So that might transfer, you know, to Washtenaw, to Michigan State, to some other places where you can actually transfer the credits and certifications and assessments that you've taken with us and decrease your cost at college through some of our articulation agreements. So certainly we continue to look at these occupations. You know, as you know, we have an aging population in Michigan and throughout the United States in healthcare, automotive, NIT, cybersecurity. In all of these areas, students coming through middle school and high school right now really can write their own ticket if they are trained, you know, in some of our programs, and we'll help them through that. We've got support, and career counselors will help, you know, match them and align them with their skill set and their interest. Just an exciting time for career technical education right now, I think, in general and specifically with the programs that we offer.
Well, Ryan, I want to finish here looking at it. I will say the one thing is there a good shortcut to see the website? You know, how I got here, clicking on a link through, you know, washtenawisd.org what's the fastest way for someone to learn more about the South and West Washtenaw Consortium?
Yep, because a majority of our programs are held at Saline High School. If they go to the Saline High School website, there's an SWWC link right on the website, a tab dedicated to our career technical education programs. And we have it's about a 25-minute video that really goes through all of our programs that will just give you a glimpse of what those programs can entail. And then all of the sophomores for our schools will come through on a tour and on a visit to take a closer look at those programs and then start their enrollment process in January. But going to that Saline Area School, Saline High School website, clicking on the SWWC, South and West Washtenaw Consortium tab, will provide them any contact information for them to get further information.
All right, great. Well, Ryan, we really appreciate it. Thank you so much. And what an awesome service that you're providing here in Washtenaw County. I'm sure you know, coming from your background, you know, in the schools, that this is a really cool opportunity for you to make such a big difference and to help people with all the things you just talked about. You know, giving them kind of like a head start on the rest of their lives.
I agree. It's an exciting position and an exciting place to be at this point in time. And you know, valuable, important work each and every day that I enjoy. So I appreciate you letting me talk about it.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. So as we look at this weekend, Michigan is 1-3, and they're going against a Rutgers team that has shown some promise. And they, you know, they beat Michigan State earlier in the year, but they just lost to Illinois, who, in my opinion, was far and away the worst team in the Big Ten this year. So they're coming off of a bad week. But for Michigan here, going against Rutgers, in a season that is completely lost for them, they're playing for nothing. They're playing for 2021. What is still at stake for Michigan going against Rutgers this weekend?
Well, I mean, kind of what we discussed early on in the podcast, Justin, I think it's just where is this team at mentally and emotionally? I mean, you know, they're down in the dumps. You know, Jim Harbaugh in his weekly press conference on Monday talked about how he was energized, how he was excited, how he was ready to, how he was really, you know, eager to coach this team still. And is that the case with the team? Are they energized? Has he found the right motivation? I mean, to me, this whole season comes down to whether or not Jim Harbaugh has what it takes to motivate a group of guys, because they're either going to go through the motions in these next couple of games and lose them to Rutgers and to Penn State, which would just be criminal at this point, or they're going to rally. He's going to show that he still has what it takes to get his guys amped up and to get them to realize their best play. And so that's what's at stake for this game is essentially, does the Jim Harbaugh era have anything left in it where he can, I don't want to say get the fan base back, but at least like tell the, you know, the administration is still on the fence about moving on from him. Like, he's got to show something to them. Like, I haven't lost this team. I haven't lost this program. I can still be the guy that runs this and does so in a fashion that can, you know, that you can be proud of, that we can take a step forward, that maybe, but probably not, that 2021 is our year. On the other hand, if they go out there and quit, if this team is does not care for their head coach, does not care for their entire coaching staff, then what will happen is they'll either lose this game or look really bad in this game, and then could lose the next game to Penn State, and then there's going to be no defending staff in this and where this program is headed. And so I think that's what's at stake for this game and the next two games.
Yeah, and when you look at what Rutgers has done this year, they scored 38 points on Michigan State. They scored 21 on Indiana, 20 against Illinois. They scored 27 points against Ohio State. They gave up 49, which actually is pretty good, honestly, against an Ohio State offense that could put up, you know, a lot if they really wanted to. So I'm seeing this defense that we saw against Wisconsin go up against a Rutgers offense that is pretty solid. They can put up points. And so it's going to be interesting to see if this team struggles with Rutgers, and I definitely can see it happening. So as far as what's at stake, it definitely is. It's honestly just the national embarrassment. Michigan already had the national embarrassment of losing to Michigan State versus a first-year coach and in a game where they were 23-point favorites. Well, now they're 10.5-point favorites, I believe, against Rutgers. At least that's what they opened up at. And if you, even though it's on Big Ten Network, it's not on ABC or Fox or anything like that, but it's a 7:30 game. And if Michigan struggles once again, this will be their third night game on national TV. So if they struggle again, the whole country, the whole Big Ten, all of Michigan fans, everybody's going to be laughing at Michigan. And so even if they don't come out and lose this game, but if they win by, I don't know, single digits or even, you know, less than 14 or something, people are going to be saying, oh my gosh, what has happened to this team? You know, it's not just losing to the Indiana and Wisconsin teams that are pretty good or Michigan State, who's the rival. They really are at the bottom of the Big Ten right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, at this point, you know, someone was asking me earlier how I feel about the game and what this week has been like because they were out of town. And I said indifference. I just have not paid attention that much. And you know, I guess I just don't, as a fan, as someone who's doing a podcast, as all those years of experience in the media, like, I just don't want to be in this spot. Like, I don't want to, like, every game have it sink to the left, the depths of despair a little bit lower. You know, like, that's just not a fun place to be. You know, so I guess I'm just hoping that there's a little bit of a glimmer of hope or a glimmer of, you know, something promise on Saturday, just so I can have a little fun. Like, this is Rutgers, right? Like, and Rutgers, like, Michigan beat them 78-0 in 2016. And I know that's, right, that's not going to happen, but I kind of just want to, Justin, I just want to see a win. I just want to see a win. I just want to see Joe Milton go out there and have some fun, or if it's Cade McNamara. I want to see Giles Jackson have an explosive play that we know he's capable of. I want to see two running backs emerge. I want to see Quiddy Pay return to the field and get two sacks. I want to see, you know, Cameron go. I just want to see all these guys that we were excited about coming to the year have a moment, because this might be their only moment all year long. I mean, it might not happen against Penn State. It might not happen against Maryland. It's not going to happen against Ohio State. I guess it could happen against, you know, Illinois in the crossover game, because they're a bad football team and Michigan's a bad football team right now. But I just don't, I just want in a season that has been, especially in these last 2 weeks, have been utterly, utterly, you know, depressing. I just want something positive, something that they'll smile about a little bit, even if it's only for a week or for 2 weeks. Just give me something to be like, oh, that was nice just to watch Michigan go out there and beat Rutgers by 24 points. And for, you know, guys to accumulate some cool stats and have some moments. That's all I'm really looking for right now. So let's take this to our predictions. And before we get to our predictions real quick, I just want to say, you know, props to Michigan hockey. Beat Wisconsin 5-2 on the road last night. You know, they're now 3-0 and looking really good. They play Wisconsin again on Friday night, which is on Fox Sports Detroit locally. And you can, you know, follow them on Twitter, UMich Hockey. Big fan. I'm trying to get a little hockey expert to come on and join us and talk about the team. Plus, next week Michigan basketball will get started on Wednesday. So, Justin, I think what we'll probably do is we'll probably have one of those early week podcasts dedicated almost exclusively just to talk football, or to talk basketball and hockey, and maybe try to do that going forward here a little bit, is have one podcast a week where it's just a basketball hockey podcast.
I think fans would appreciate that instead of having us talk about this football team.
I would appreciate that. Again, like, it's a beautiful Friday here in Southeast Michigan. It's supposed to be 60 degrees. I don't want to be depressed going into my weekend. I want to be excited. So Justin, my prediction, I'll let you finish us off here. Oh man, I'm really concerned that this team has quit on its coaches and that it's going through the motions. The one thing I'm energized by is I think this quarterback competition, whether it is Joe Milton, if it is Joe Milton, I think that we'll see the best of Joe Milton this week. If it is Cade McNamara, I think that could give some energy and some boost to this team, to this offense, when it really needs it. If Quiddy Pay comes back, I like Michigan's chances, because I think that he adds an element that they don't have otherwise. I picked against Michigan last week. You know, I picked against them, I think the Indiana game, I think they're going to win, but I think it's going to be, I don't think it's going to be as much fun as we want it to be. I'm going to say 28-24 Michigan. But Justin, man, I would really not be surprised if they lose this game.
Yeah. I mean, would you have ever thought that you'd be picking Michigan to win by just 4 points against Rutgers this year, or any year for that matter? So it's, that just shows it right there. And the fact that I think that there are a decent amount of fans that are with you saying, we don't know if Michigan's going to win this football game. And so the fact that we're just 4 years removed, like you said, from 78-0. And now we're talking about Michigan being in a close game with Rutgers says all you need to know. I'm going to be a little bit more optimistic because it is nice out. It's going to be a good weekend. I'm going to go 34-21. I think that, like you said, this Michigan, quarterback competition will spark the offense a little bit. If you want to talk about what's at stake, we're going to figure out if Michigan has a quarterback for 2021, or if they're going to be looking to JJ McCarthy or the transfer portal. Who knows at this point? So I think that is definitely what's at stake. If we can have a either at least one good quarterback or decent quarterback out of the two that they're going to trot out there on Saturday. So, yeah, I'm going to say 34-21. I think that this finally does – Michigan has some breathing room. Maybe they looked inward a little bit after getting whomped on by Wisconsin. And I think that they have a decent night on Saturday night. So with that being said, did you have anything else you wanted to give the listeners before we take off for this weekend?
No, just thanks to our awesome sponsors, Kapnick Insurance Group and Frankenmuth Insurance, to Lewis Jewelers, to Wolverine State Brewing Company, Weber's Hotel and Restaurant. And, you know, with the shutdown in effect, if it's possible – for you to order carryout from Wolverine, from Weber's, from any of these great places in Ann Arbor or in your small, you know, in your town, do so. Those businesses all could really use it right now. And so it's up to us to kind of keep them going through this shutdown here in Michigan and through what will be these winter months. So support your local businesses, support your small businesses, and we'll come back on Sunday morning. We talked to Will. He kind of felt bad. He overslept last weekend, but he should be joining us. Will Heiner should be joining us on Sunday morning to talk about this Michigan Rutgers game. Thanks.
All right. Yeah. And follow us on Twitter at Stadium Main Pod. Follow me at Justin Rowe 92 and Mike at Michael Spath ITH. You can get all of our upcoming hockey and basketball coverage on there as well. So looking forward to both those seasons starting up here soon. Thanks for listening. We'll see you guys on Sunday.
This is the Stadium and Main podcast, presented by Kapnick Insurance Group, Wolverine State Brewing Company, and Lewis Jewelers.